Are you in Brisbane and looking for Brisbane's largest range of premium aerosols? Crush City was established in 2010 to provide a great retail space and the best quality materials and equipment for every occasion, with heavy stocks of Montana cans, Bez, Loop and Molotow. To find out more, including opening times and deliveries, get at the team at crushcity.com.au or get at the team via Crush City Fame on Instagram, or head into the shop at 423 Ipswich Road, Annerley. Crush City are proud sponsors of Beers, Beats and the Biz. 420 Superstore are one of Australia's largest providers of 420 cultural giftwares and paraphernalia. Their product range includes a wide variety of items, from dried herb aromatherapy devices, rolling and cutting supplies, herbal extraction devices, hydroponic grow equipment, to candy, carver and clothing. Open at their brick and mortar location at the Hooper Centre, Toowoomba, Queensland, and online at 420superstore.com.au. From seed to satisfied, 420 Superstore has everything you need. Visit 420superstore.com.au today. 420 Superstore are official sponsors of Beers, Beats and the Biz. Support businesses supporting us.
You want to know the real deal? Here it is. You're tuned in to Beers, Beats and the Biz.
All right, one time back in effect. This is the Beers, Beats and the Biz podcast, broadcasting live from the Shire Studios. And anyone tuning into this episode will be looking around, man. We're looking all casual and conversational now, man. We're fucking, the table is gone. Insidious has rejigged the studio somewhat for us. And now, man, we're coming at it far more casual, conversational, and, you know, always communicating that message. This is, once again, Beers, Beats and the Biz. I am Jake Biz. Find us on social media at Beers, Beats the Biz. Shouts to 420 Superstore, shouts to Illegal Merch, shouts to Crush City, and shouts to this man joining us. Today we are joined by a legend out of Sydney, the mayor of Newtown himself, from Scratches Records, Big Village, Daily Meds going back in the piece. Man, we're joined by the one and only P Smurf.
Blessed to be here. Thank you, brother, for having me. I appreciate it.
Dude, it's fucking good to have you here, man. And it's good to have you here. Man, we're road testing this new setup, so I appreciate you coming through, man. And, you know, the table's gone, and now we're just fucking kicking it and chilling.
I'm lounging. I'm liking it.
That's it. You know,
I needed to chill after this weekend anyway, so it's nice to be just sitting back. Cruising.
Dude, I'm fucking feeling it, eh? I'm not mad at this situation fucking one bit, brother. One bit. Like, you know, like I said, we'd always have this table here, and some days it's just like, where do I put my arms and how do I sit and where do I lean and whatever. But yeah, man, I'm fucking with this. But brother, man, you're here in the company of Charlie Tuna.
Yeah.
In the company of who else were you with?
Chris Monkey was the man I've been performing with over the weekend.
Yeah.
Up at Earth Frequency Festival.
That's right.
The reason I ended up in around Brizzy. It was awesome. It's like an electronic music fest. We got invited out last year with Chris, who's a mate of mine who's been living in Sydney for a while, off and on in Australia for the last 10 or 12 years.
Yep.
Originally from Bristol via New York. He's been around a fair bit, but amazing D&B producer and DJ. So yeah, we've been working on a set the last few years. Fits well into some of these other environments that they're a bit more dance heavy a bit more bass heavy. It was really fun. But we took Tuna with us as well because he got booked for the set, and we kind of helped out with the tour. And Chris Monkey was his tour DJ as well. So,
oh, is that right?
He met him at Shambhala, which is a festival in Canada over a decade ago. Ended up tour managing for him through the UK a little bit. So they've had a kind of ongoing relationship as well. I met Tuna when I was like 14 or 13 in Sydney, and kind of been chasing him around and hanging out with him a bit every time he comes to the country. So it was nice to, you know, hang out properly over the last couple of weeks with him. He's such a legend.
Yeah. How's the set work? Like, in terms of, like, is it the two of you on stage? Like, you were telling me off mic a bit, but, you know, for the people listening, like, when they see you guys live, how's that sort of dynamic, man?
Yeah, well, it's, I consider it to be Monkey's set, but we work so closely on this specific one together that it's like we're finding beats that we like, finding raps that sit over them, things that I've written over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. It's basically us just bouncing off each other for an hour and a half around that time that we got.
Okay.
And it's constructed like we've got hooks, we've got verses from different projects I've worked on, solo stuff as well as group stuff and collabs. And then unreleased stuff and a bit of freestyling. And just kind of keep the ball going for an hour and a half. And I just kind of lace it with like dense lyrics and you know, try to give it a bit of room to breathe as
well. Fucking keep the vibes up,
man. Keep the vibes up. He drops dub plates that he's done with different MCs from around the spot, like this Mad Sister Nancy dub plate he always comes through with, and so he's got other vocals in there as well. But yeah, it's different because the set that I've been kind of working on as a solo artist for the last 11-12 years has been with DJ Cost, who's a New South Wales DMC champ, three times running, super amazing turntablist, and that's kind of all our original tunes, where which he cuts on most of the time, so original beats, back-to-back sort of tunes, whereas this is all kind of jack beats and just keeping it live on it on 140 BPM to 170 BPM sort of stuff, as opposed to the more boom bap heavy stuff that I tend to release a little bit more of.
How'd you find stepping into that, like into that sort of thing? It
came naturally, just because I've been around like the kind of Marrickville warehouse scene, which is in Sydney. There's just like these areas of kind of commercial warehouse spaces that have been converted into party spaces. And early days, it was always really bass heavy, like UK influenced music that was getting played there. So I tend to freestyle over the top of a lot of those beats and rock those parties for years, you know, since the mid 2000s. And so yeah, just riding to it with the Daily Meds, we'd do 140 BPM stuff as well. It was a bit more bass heavy and just, you know, had that tempo to it, easing into the sort of grime era as well. Like even Rappaport, who was one of the managers on Big Village, he's he got us into grime pretty early on his album in 2009. We did some stuff with Claws and Fangs, Max Gosford. So I was always rhyming over some of that stuff, and I'd writing to it, but never had a complete set together. Now with Monkey, it was like, that was his drive. Let's give that a go. So, and it was nice to get back into a back and forth with someone after kind of focusing on solo stuff for the last 8 years, just getting Monkey G'd up. Getting me G'd up to do a a live set and book shows for us and go out on the road and like be actively seeking out gigs. It's good because I really love performing. So
Did I mean, fuck, did COVID fuck with shit for a long time? It had to have.
Like everyone has their stories behind it, and artists as a whole, you know, definitely were massively affected. You know, I earn a lot of my money off doing gigs, whether it was
touring too.
Definitely try to be on the road as much as possible. And at home, you know, there's always something going on. There's always someone hitting me up to come and host this or to jump on them with this, and you know, or jump up on this open jam night, or you know. And then also events and promotion, because I was running Freshly Squeezed for years, which is a monthly hip hop night out of Sydney. Did a bit of touring. Scratches Records, just kicking that label off at the exact same time, basically, you know. And then youth work, I do a lot of youth work, so the schools weren't opening up, you know, or if they were, they were limited, you know, limited amounts of activities that, that were going on in there. All that extracurricular stuff that I come and do with music, hip-hop workshops, funding cut off, all the
funding's cut to that sort of shit.
It was nuts, and that's another thing ongoing, you know, trying to work through that. But yeah, I mean, it gave me time to focus on other awesome parts of music. Like I started making beats during that time, finally. It's something I wanted to do for years and years, and started following through that, started mixing records as well. So yeah, and it gave me a little bit of time to do that as well, I think. So I mean, you just got to try to find the positives. Now it seems to be back on, and people are, you know, I've got a lot of things happening at the moment, you know, in the future that I'll be, you know, projects that I'll be working on. And I'm happy that we're out and about around people and people are smiling and going out and boogieing again.
Well, I see that I think the World Health Organization, I saw the other day, the World Health Organization the day before the coronation announced that COVID is no longer a global pandemic. So that bodes well for everyone now, doesn't it?
Fingers crossed for as long as until the next one.
Whatever comes along.
We might have a window here. So let's use it for whatever it's worth. Get busy.
Who's taking care of the shop while you're up here, mate?
So I've got Ada. If you're in Sydney, and go say hello to her, she's a legend. I've actually been doing different bits of youth work with her since she was really young, like about four. I used to drive a big truck into the park and set up equipment for Marrickville Council and Inner West Council for families to come down to. So I met her there. She ended up working at a primary school with her, and then she'd come to gigs, and then she started helping with the shop. Now she's, yeah, she's around 20 and she's running shit for me basically. So yeah, she's down there holding it down, as well as a couple other staff that'll come in and jump in every now and then. But yeah, as I said, I was kind of offline for the last like 5 days. So I get back on my emails today and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I got to get back to Sydney. I got to do something. Sorry to anyone who's buying things on Discogs at the moment. Sorry to anyone who's waiting for replies on emails, but yeah, I'll be back.
You can get back to work.
But yeah, look, I've actually been really slow on work the last 4 months because I had a massive car accident in Redfern. I got T-boned at this intersection and ended up in a brick wall totaling this car via a pedestrian, a few injuries involved, Jesus. You know, including myself and my passenger. And yeah, it was just, it was nuts. So I've been just slowly easing back into that. I've had a lot of help at the shop.
Fuck, sort of, when's that?
Oh, beginning of January. Yeah, 21st. Shit. It fractured my sternum and tore a bunch of ligaments. And just sort of the injuries that keep, they're still niggling now.
Oh,
so,
dude.
But all good. So
yeah,
it's nice.
I'm
feeling a lot better, you know, and it's just being out and gigging and being able to talk to people out and about is really helpful as well. And just, you know, talk to other people who've gone through similar situations is nice, you know, because cars are heavy, dangerous things, you
know. Fucking A, man. Big hunks of metal on the road, bro.
Yeah, big bullets just getting driven around. Yeah. You know, so we just all got to try to remember that. But yeah, it is what it is, and I'm glad everyone's alive and surviving. So I'm very blessed to still be kicking on, to tell you the truth. So.
How long are you out of business for? I was
out of action for like 8 weeks at least with the sternum, you know, because it's just, it affects everything around you. But then once that started calming down, I realized, you know, my wrists and getting tests on my knees and things like that. So yeah, but yeah, generally out for that, and now just slowly getting back into things as well.
But
it's good.
I'm
all good.
That's fucking good news, dude. Mm. That's good news. How are you finding like running retail, like in this day and age?
It wasn't my thing. I never thought I'd never done retail before. You know, my main coin was doing youth work for the last, you know, 15 years, as well as, you know, side hustles, gigging and events and everything like that. But I think people personally want to see physical stuff more and more now as we've come out of this digital age, and people do a lot of online buying, whether it's music or physical goods. And I think, you know, hip hop is a true testament to that physicality and having to be in the space with each other and around each other, and that community network, and seeing the artwork on vinyls, and selling each other's shirts and different labels and companies that kind of collab and artists. So I think it's been good being in that space because I was able to connect with people during COVID, and they'd be able to come in, we'd be able to chat, and it wasn't all online sort of chatting. We'd be able to talk in person. It's definitely picked up in terms of sales. People are coming back out in the state, around the world, are coming into the city again instead of just dealing with your one area, because people from out west weren't coming into the city as much. You know, people from all areas, you know, weren't. So now we're at least opened up to more and more people. But during that time, look, it just depends if what you're doing and if you think it's worthwhile. And I like this. I like selling records, and you know, being a part of that kind of ongoing, you know, that aspect of hip hop, which is still like, you know, open mic and a DJ here and there. Yeah. We get to spin, do little beat battles and things like that. Just little chill events out of the shop as well. So I mean, I don't think it's completely going to be a dying thing. I think people are going to need to get out of their house more and more, especially as most of the world's cut off from those aspects in other regards, you know. So we'll see how we go. I mean, who knows what's going to be happening in any parts of the world as we go on. I'm just going to take it as it goes. If this shop doesn't last over the next couple of years, I'll move on to the next and see what I do. Like I do online sales and everything like that as well, but something about coming in, listening to the record in the shop, talking to someone who knows about it, or at least is happy to listen to what you have to say about it as well. Because I get schooled by lots of people coming into the shop and talking about their style of music or what they like, and we get to talk about that. And I enjoy it. So but I'd never done retail before. So even the idea of like displaying things correctly and trying to market to people. And I don't like that aspect of having to market, sell things to people that they don't want. So it's kind of just like, just try to have cool things people enjoy and like, and then, you know, I don't want to be there trying to go, well, do you want this and do you want that? It's like, well, maybe you'll like this and there's that, and then I'll get back to my work. I'll get back to my laptop and get back to doing whatever I gotta do.
Yeah, that's unreal to have, like, to have not no sort of retail experience mm-hmm. and then to open that store. How's the reception to the shop?
Yeah, look, like, the Sydney scene has definitely, you know, really been awesome, and they've come out and, you know, come out and checked it, as well as beyond that, you know, people come in to, from interstate and want to come say hello. So I think it's good. I've definitely got to continue on working on making sure I have stock for them and, you know, I'm on my game in that regard, because there's just so many different aspects of that. But generally having just another little spot that cements where we're at and gives people a place to meet up and hang and, you know, and just chat for a minute is, it's good, because 567's been holding that down in Sydney for a long time, you know, and they're really good old mates of mine. It's predominantly graffiti based, but also it's a hip hop culture store as well, you know, so that's a big hub for that. And, you know, we've got a, you know, some other shops that have come in over the years, you know, I've heard, Monk, Sleeping Monk talking about the lounge back in the day, and Next Level Records and Soul Clap, and it's just kind of developed on through that as well, you know. So it's just nice being in the next little spot.
One kind of evolved into the next in with a lot of those stores, didn't it, at one point?
And it, like, connected connected crew, you know, who'd come in and move it. But then I guess the vinyl did kind of slow down in production, and when we started the label Big Village Records in 2010, we were definitely focusing on CDs at the time, you know, and we were pushing, you know, a couple thousand CDs on releases that would go well, and then we didn't really catch on to that streaming thing as quick as everyone else did. We're like, and then it just blew up, and then vinyl's kind of maintained, and we're pushing that back, and that's, you know, remained high, and even now is selling more than ever before. So I guess the actual industry of vinyls is doing well at the moment. So and selling secondhand, finding like $2 records and selling them for $600 is fun.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's fucking super fun. You know? Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
We're not going for big money. It's all like, you know, as long as I can keep the shop afloat and keep it rolling.
Make sure you just sound that mic. Now bring it in. Bring it in, man. If you want to relax, just kick back and whatever. Yeah. No, just for audio purposes and all that sort of shit. Plus, your voice is sounding mad husky.
It's a little bit.
Weekend.
Look, I got a crackly voice as it is. Yeah. But yeah, 4 days in the dirt and way too many spliffs.
Out the back of Ipswich.
Out the back of Ipswich. It'll do it to you, you know.
It'll do it to the best of us, mate.
But I do. I grew up with a croaky voice. I strained it super early growing up. So I've actually. It's not too bad at the moment. But
going back to Scratch's Records, man, because I'm always intrigued by people who run retail, particularly in this day and age where everything seems to be online. You know, the retail experience is a fucking, is to me very much a thing, you know, like I enjoy that personally. How do you stock? Like, how do you take, you know, what's ever enough? You know, like, I see that you sell, like, I mean, you're doing vintage clothing, you know, secondhand wax, all that kind of thing. Are you stocking, like, new releases? How does, you know, like, do you consign releases from around the country?
I initially, like, GPS, who's used to run Purebred Records and old school legend from Sydney, he gave me a couple of crates on consignment when I started of some amazing old school Oz hip hop wax, you know, and then other people would come in and I'd do bulk buys. They'd offer things up. So I'm just, it's constantly digging, seeking out things online, but people do approach me now, which is great. It's just having that funding to go and buy it as well. Consignment is great for me as well. But you get so busy when you got 10 consignees and you got to pay them back every month. You don't know how much you've owed, you know? So I'm trying to have as much stock as I can, but also for that old school hip hop stuff that, you know, people really need, you know, it's harder to find and it's definitely more sought after. So I'm just like digging through all different styles and genres. Like I don't like all styles of music, but I have an appreciation for a lot, like a wide range, for so it's nice for me to find and just dig out. But people are approaching me, so look, if you have collections, hit me up, because I'm definitely looking for them. But yeah, initially my parents ran the shop, 82 to 93 in Newtown. So it was like a secondhand record store called Scratches Records. And they had it on King Street, not far from where I'm at the moment. So when I did kick off the shop, dad gave me a couple hundred records, because he was doing vinyl, record festivals. He was still dealing records since, you know, they closed the shop in 93. So I'd be doing that with him, going out to Parramatta Record Fair and Glebe Record Fair and selling records with him. But as COVID hit, he was like, I just can't dig anymore. I don't want to get sick. Because generally he was just like, I'm not going out as much. The fairs aren't happening. So he gave me a couple hundred, but quite mediocre, but filled the shop up a little bit. And that gave me that. I put in a 400 of my own, and then consignees and a couple bulk buyers. Man,
wow.
I was on my way, and I had enough to start and maintain. So I've got a lot of records out the back that I got a price, and that's also time consuming and financially consuming if you're getting other people to do it. So yeah, I'm just slowly rolling it. I'm trying not to like fit within a framework of what retail is supposed to be. I'm trying to be open 5 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, if it doesn't work, I'll put it up on Google, you know, I'll post it. I'm not going to be there. I do it as much as I can fit within a, you know, 11 to 5 framework, you know, but I just like things aren't the same as they used to be. And I don't need to live in what other people think how I should be running a business. I'm just trying to be as transparent with how it's run, as well as just give myself time to do music and to do my other, you know, do youth work and do performance and everything like that as well, you know, not put too much pressure on yourself.
It's gonna be a grind, bro.
Yeah, but it's a grind that I love, you know, and I'm enjoying it. Until I'm not, I'll just keep on riding it out, you know.
Yeah.
And it has my own collection has grown exponentially. And I've, you know, started mixing records. So if I keep some records, I can go spin records somewhere and make a couple hundred off it, which is like warrants me getting some new records as well, you know. So all in all, I think it's feeding into things that have kept me happy, especially during like a hard time for people generally, you know. It's given me a focal point and some added interest. And it's, you know, great to find vinyls that you want to sample and flip now as well and want to mix out and want to play to people. So it's good. And I'm just trying not to, necessarily do anything that's going to overly stress me to a point where I'm just going to axe it, you know. Just keep it crazy up. You know,
but the fucking like the resale on wax nowadays too, it's like kind of what you were saying, man. It's fucking through the roof. Like I know like Rocking Horse Records up here, you know, like I go in and see fucking represses of records that retail, you know, and I know what the markup is on wax and all that sort of shit, but fuck, like $90 for you know, a copy of a record that, you know, I might have paid 40 for, you know, 10 15 years ago. Sure. Like, you know, someone was telling me recently, like, you got an original pressing of Mad Villain, it's worth a fucking small fortune.
No doubt. You know? MF Doom just went out up as soon as he passed as well, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
You never know who's dropping next, so hold on to your wax.
For real, dude, for real. But your folks used to run a Scratches Records, right?
Scratches. So they were both high school teachers. Dad was working out in Ed's out west. Mum was somewhere around the inner west. And they linked up after a couple of years. They just decided that that's what they wanted to do together. Yeah. And they put in, and, you know, I grew up there for the first 7 years. Billy was, my sister was singer in Daily Med's Big Village, Reverse Polarity. She was 3.5 years older than me, so she spent a lot of time in there as well.
Would have been a dope place to grow up.
It was cool, like interesting alternative people in that in Newtown, and their friends, and just record diggers as a whole are interesting, quirky,
you
know,
definitely,
random types of people, you know. Yeah. So they definitely, I was exposed to a lot of interesting crew. But just a lot of music, like just like always playing tunes, you know, always at home, always at the shop, there's always tunes on. So it kind of came naturally eventually that we'd do that, you know. And hip hop for me and Billy just like swept this like real quickly, you know.
Yeah.
In early days, we were just like, oh, okay, this is our thing now, you know, because it wasn't their focus, but they'd play us hip hop.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like that was their focus. It was just that tracks would come on and they'd have records, they'd have 3 Foot High and Rising, they'd have Paid in Full rocking, they'd have Mr. Bob Dobolina on the jukebox, you know. We'd be pumping all these tunes, and so eventually when we took it on board, it just came naturally that, oh, actually we've been exposed to all these people for ages, you know. Delight with Q-Tip, like Tribe Called Quest were my favorite, but that tune was getting played to me my entire life, you know. Grieves, so eventually I'm like, Grieves in the Heart, I'm like, oh, that's Q-Tip. I'm like, my God, I love this dude. So, and then all those connections got made. So, it was nice. It's I credit them for so much of
taste
and interest. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my sister as well.
And those joints are just pumping in the house.
Yeah, 100%. They have a 7-inch jukebox player, which I'm trying to get, you know, fixed back up. But that was in the house, so we'd just go up and press the 2 buttons and be able to play whatever. And Dad would always change over the 7s. And So yeah, I'm trying to fix that at the moment. It's hard to fix these old things. It was a good time. There's like, it was crazy as well, you know.
Yeah.
It was a heavy lot of, it was a noisy family on all levels, you know. Right? A lot of very loud. And as I was saying about the scratchy voice, you know, this is like they thought I was deaf as a kid because I was basically just trying to yell over these people <'Cause> they, so I could be heard as the youngest kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And they reckon I've just put massive strain on it as a young age, you know. And I'll also just say, obviously, I smoke a bit. And,
yeah. You know, the thing, but, there are extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, it is what it is. And Wednesday is my best day for recording anything.
Yeah.
So apparently, this is a Wednesday today, isn't it? But,
well, midweek, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Once it is.
What, how many people in the family?
Mum and dad and my older sister, Billy, and then I got an older half brother. He wasn't living with us. So yeah, it wasn't a huge amount, but just a lot of, just a vocal bunch, extreme personalities.
And, you know. Trying to hear one another over Mr. Dobolina.
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's it. That's it. Over the bass. But yeah, I sleep really well to music.
Yeah.
And, you know?
Yeah.
And chatter.
Yeah.
You know, I can go. So I'm used to that, which is good. And loud noises living on Main Street in the middle of the city as well and growing up there. So.
Yeah, it was Newtown, man. Like in terms of, you know, like demographics and just growing up there. Like I've never been out there personally, you know.
It's awesome. It's like maybe not ethnically as diverse as other places in Sydney, but it's culturally diverse. And that also leads to a lot of different styles of people. It's become majorly gentrified over the last, you know, 25 years, as a lot of amazing places do, because people want to move in there, and then it just forces out the people who don't own their houses. And if you don't own those houses, then you're going to kind of force to move out. So you end up losing these people who've created these areas.
Yeah.
And luckily my parents managed to pay their house off over 25 years. So they're still down in Erskineville. But it's changed because of that, you know, but these people who want to come to these areas, they want to do something, but I don't know, they tend to feed off it more than give back to it.
So
I think we're definitely in a bit of a space like that, but out of it's maintained this like party, artsy, musicy kind of vibe through Sydney's kind of downfall in the live music scene the last 20-25 years, you know, due to pokies, due to shit laws, lockout laws, you know, that we had for 10 years and just, you know, gambling and just like just being crooked generally, and just axing, you know, laws that permit you to complain about a pub that you moved in next to that was open for 100 years, like the Annandale Hotel, the Sandringham Hotel, all these places that shut down, you know. Whereas Newtown, it's still going and it's still, you can still go there, find some music, find some cool people to chat with, get great food, you know, I think, and people are just a bit more open and nice, a bit, you know, there's still a good vibe there, and I still really like being there, and the shop's there, so it's good for me to go back there every day again after I've kind of been living next to Central Station the last 10 or so 12, 13 years. I've got a warehouse there called Hibernian House. It's just like big sort of 6-7 story warehouse in the middle of the city, just commercial space covered in graph and different units all through it, and it's really cool. I'll show you some pics of it, but But yeah, we've been there for about 13 years. So, but yeah, having the shop back in Newtown is great because I just get to see all the crew that I grew up with there again, and I'm just seeing people on a regular, and it's a nice place to go and work. I feel comfy there, you know. So,
what's Newtown's proximity to the city? Like, how far out?
5 Ks.
Is that all?
Yeah, it's super close.
Yeah, it's right close. Yeah. Because even when we went down, we go down February or something like that, and like old mate on the Sunday, we had a few hours before we recorded Death Wish Cast.
Yeah.
And he took us through Redfern. Like, he took us for a drive out to Bondi and shit like that, just do a little tourist run or whatever, because we're staying out in the western suburbs somewhere.
Yeah.
And he took us for a drive. And we're driving through Redfern, and I remember going down. We stayed in Redfern on the when I came down with Lays for the Band in Queensland tour, way back then.
Yeah.
And like it was just after the riots, man. And it was hectic. Yeah. It was still hectic, you know. Yeah. And when we drove through it, you know, you're talking, you're talking close to 20 years later. Yeah, almost. Fuck, that was like 2014. Oh, sorry. When was it? 2004 when we were down there for that. But like driving through there, man, that's what even he said. He goes, it's gentrified now.
Yeah.
You know, it looks so different, man.
It's the inner city and
close to town.
Yeah, right next to it. And then so Erskineville, Alexandria, McDonaldtown, Redfern, that's all next to, you know, all next to Central and sort of flows into the inner west area. But yeah, there was people wanted to live near there. They wanted to live closer to the beach. They want to live in these areas generally. Yep. Which is funny now that I guess since COVID, people just want to get out of the city now too, because they don't need to necessarily work in those city areas. So then there's a dynamic shift in that. But I think just generally Sydney is trying to cater to a middle upper class, middle-aged group of people who just don't necessarily want to, aren't going to do too much damage or aren't going to cause too much trouble, you know, and that's that they push for. They promote through beaches and monuments and weather and, you know, these higher end pubs and venues, and they just dismiss this undercurrent of culture there, you know, that is there on numerous levels of music and arts and, you know, definitely hip hop, but it's just been a struggle.
And nine times out of ten, and not to cut you off, but nine times out of ten, it's that undercurrent, it's that culture that drives, well, that facilitates the drive to move into some of those suburbs. We see it here in Brisbane, same thing going on probably in every capital around Australia. Rent prices going through the roof, you know, being marketed to the, you know, those with upward mobility, you know, like people of probably my age group anyway, you know, like I'm in my early 40s now. So probably attempting to sell to people like us, trying to move up and whatever, but it's the grimy side of these places that brought people there to begin with.
Make it appealing
in some way, shape or form, you know, and then culture feeds around that. Yeah. You get venues, you get this, you get that. And then, like you said, you know, they build a fucking apartment block alongside an old pub that's been standing for 100 years, noise complaints, cunt smashing bottles, and then they fucking shut the pub down. It's nuts, bro.
And they need to have laws in place to stop people doing that. And when they're not catering to those...
Yeah.
to that style of the arts and music, then you just know something's actually inherently like crooked, basically. They just push that to the side. But at the same time, a credit to everyone who's still there rocking it and making shows happen, because it is there, and venues who put in time and money and effort to keep this maintained, especially ones that don't have anything to do with poker machines basic, you know, food that are just catered to music, and that's awesome. And there's definitely shout out to everyone out there who's still on the grind and keeping it rolling, you know.
Yeah, because those venues are only open from, you know, like fucking a lot of them are only open on select days from X hour to whatever, you know. And if they don't have pokies in there, they're not a pub, they don't have that revenue stream coming in, you know. Running a venue, man, it's not as simple as just fucking, you know,
100%,
you know, naming a place and fucking opening the doors and booking an act, all the insurances and premiums and all that sort of shit. 100%.
And when you're dealing with council creeping up your neck and government and police constantly who, you know, don't seem to want to help. You know, it's tough.
Yeah.
But that's the idea. Shit was never going to be easy, you know, and nothing worthwhile is ever easy.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
And definitely within the hip hop scene, it was always an offshoot, right? It was never, you know, even though there is, you know, a lot of front runners in the music industry now and people paying more attention to it, I guess, you know, it was never supposed to be this like slip in and just everything's going to be grand. And it's cool. It's a struggle, but we all love doing what we're doing.
That's
so
what we do.
It's all good.
That's why we're all sitting here doing this, But let's talk about that grind, bro. Like coming up in Sydney and all that sort of thing. You know, we've sort of touched on it already, man. The folks running a record store and whatever. But when do you first start sort of putting that pen to paper, start sort of pushing your own music and all that kind of thing?
Well, in primary school, even at the end, I was, you know, we were doing pieces, me and this guy, Akira, was one of my oldest mates from Newtown Primary. And we were piecing a bit back in year 5 and 6 and just horrible shit, tagging on walls and that. Yeah. And then year 7 and 8, we were graphing a little bit with boys that we'd meet through high school. And there was, you know, link ups with like KBM, which was like, the Spit Syndicate boys, they were bombing heaps. And then there was another crew, THB, that this lad B Luds, who was in Reverse Polarities, who started this, my first crew with us. He was, you know, hanging with them, and we'd be freestyling in the toilets or freestyling in the, you know, on the oval, or jigging to go have a smoke and down at the park and freestyling with this lad. And he was like 2 years above me, and he introduced me to Kid Complete, who was our DJ. Bernie, she was like my first graph mentor. She used to hang out with Cobes, HR in Jersey and that, and she used to write Willow, and she used to school me a bit on that. And she was going out with Mute MC, who was part of this crew, Reverse Polarities. They just started with Damon. So we all just linked up in around 2003, something like that.
Yeah.
And around that time, realizing that I enjoy this a lot more, I have more of a connection with the lyric writing than I did with the physical art, even though I love it. Mm. I just didn't pick it up as quickly. I don't have that, the brain. My brain works differently. Yeah, yeah, I love graphing still now, but it's been a slow process for me. And it, when I started freestyling and rhyming, people were like, man, you're very good at that. I'm like, fuck, I love this. This is dope, you know? Yeah. So we just do that. And then suddenly we're linking up with Reverse Polarity, like Mute, who's was from Eagle Vale out west. We were all inner west crew, and then linked up with Mute and Mick Owen and Deathless and 2412 and Mount Druitt and Minto and Lumia and this crew. And then our first gigs were at Minto PCYC, you know, with dudes like El Fresh and JE, shit like that. Like, and in those early days, and then just started making tracks out of Kit's bedroom, and just he was producing. And eventually, I think my first pub gig was at the Cat and Fiddle Hotel in Balmain the night before my second HSC English exam. I remember that being this definitive moment of like, I don't care about this shit. I just want to pass these tests. I don't even want to pass. I just want to get out of this place because what I'm doing is rhyming. Like, I'd be in music class, and my bass teacher was my music teacher, and he'd come and he'd see me writing rhymes. He's like, just pretend to do shit. Pretend that you're doing something. So it was already a massive focus through that end of high school. I'm just like, and coming up out of, you know, there was, it was really nice to just jump straight into that. And I'd already had a pathway, and I've kind of just kept that going in some way, you know, and it hasn't really been a thought about it. It's just kind of kept writing. Like, we were putting on our own gigs with RP, burning CDs, you know, not the best mixes or masters, you know, we'd try to do it as DIY as we could, you know, had a bit of pride in it to think that. Even at the time, I wish we'd gone to lengths of getting it mixed and mastered and released properly at those times. But it was also just an amazing fun thing that we were all doing, and just linking up with different crew and just making tunes without that pressure of having to, you know, it was all just a natural growth, and wasn't feeling like we had to do this or prove that. It was like, we're rocking shows and we're bringing people together, and we're, you know, we're putting on big parties at that point and linking up with all these other artists. A lot of bands, you know, we'd be crossing over that. We were quite politically orientated as well as just like heavy lyric, dense lyric based stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like always like a social message that tried to come with it. And I don't know. We just connected with people and just kept putting on shows, and just kept rolling into that. Started meeting all the extended fam that then formed Big Village Records, which was like Fundamentals. Those boys moved in down the road from me, all the Blue Mountains connection. So I grew in Newtown, and Newtown had a really big connect. So like, I got invited up to a support Funkors in like 2006 or something by Backyard Lab, or a crew from up there. And then started linking up with Platypush and Codex, and linking up with Fundamentals moved up the road. So we sort of linked with them, True Vibe Nation, Loose Change, which is Rappaport. He was going out with my sister. He was also in Newtown, but they were like 6 years older than me. True Vibe Nation, shout out Suburban Dark, all that initials, Big Village crew. And then we were just like, I don't think Obese and Elephant Tracks are gonna sign us. Maybe we should just start something ourselves, you know, which were the more focal points in our lives that were signing acts from Sydney, at least at that time. You know, we knew the Herd crew, and we knew, you know, you know, some of the Obese crew, you know, Thunders were getting signed around that time.
Well, how Dielectrics, what was your association to, you know, those sorts? Well, you know, the
Basic Equipment as well. I say, like, course, you know, they, you know, Herb was a good mate of mine, and he was a younger lad in that crew as well, you know. You know, but I just, at that time it wasn't on our thought process that they were just going to go jump and we already had this click. We had a bit of a vibe. So we were like, let's start doing that. But like, they were really influential to us in terms of like Elephant Tracks, just in terms of support in forming that label, also putting us on gigs and everything that. Ozzy Battler and you know, the Astronomy Class crew, you know, Chasm and Robbo and that. And
I love that first Astronomy Class record, man.
Oh man, it's so good. So good. I love Battler, and I've been working a lot with Chasm recently, doing a lot of youth work with a crew called Nakama Arts at the moment. So we're doing lots of different sort of community music based projects together, which is sick. Also still trying to get some beats off him because he's still killing it. He was the crossover between Elephant Tracks and Obese at that time as well. So he made Beyond the Beat Tape, he was getting on the Blue Mounds lads, but he also had Pegs, and he was also have Earthy. And you know, so he's a good little crossover for that. And I think, and then D-Trix was blowing up, and I was, you know, he was a bit older than me, and it was also just, he's just a gun. So it was always just like, we were always, you know, you know. I would always be like watching what he was doing and seeing how he's progressing into that format. So it was just like, and we were like, well, how are we going to make this? We got to get music out. So when we did form Big Village, it was like, okay, let's try and get distribution. Let's try and get our CDs in stores. Let's try and do this all together. And I was like, 13 people trying to make things happen, which can be a bit complicated, but it was cool. And then, so Reverse Polarities then formed into Daily Meds. And at the same time as Big Village, there's also a crew called Sketch the Rhyme that we used to rock with, which is like a freestyle hip hop art crew.
Yeah.
It was like live drawing that we'd project on a screen and then we'd freestyle about it with a live band and we'd go on tour. And we did Woodford a lot up here. Coalition crew brought us up here back in like 2010, You and His Army, love that lad, and Kel on Earth, they'd bring us up in the early days. Master Wolf jump up with us and all that. Cryptomistic when he was still killing that. But it all just sort of formed from that. I don't know if that question was initially how it come about, but just constantly putting on gigs, man. It was a big thing. It was like, let's gig. And once we've got Sydney on lock, it's like, let's go somewhere else. Let's go link up over here. Let's go tour there. And I always wanted to make that point of, you know, going to connect with people that I really appreciated, like making a point to go link with Musty after a few years of gigging with him every now and then. I was like, let's come down, let's make music together.
I definitely like when you just mentioned Dietrich and all that sort of thing, listening to your music and stuff, man, I hear that influence. Well, in there.
A double time influence from him for sure. No doubt. And Def Wish, you know, no doubt, who has influenced us both massively.
Yes. Yeah.
And as I said off camera to you, a bit of Bone Thugs and Harmony, didn't hurt it.
All that sort of shit.
But no, he definitely did, you know. And Joe New, big shouts to Joe New, massive influence and another Mountains Head. And, you know, we'd do gigs with him up in the mountains, vice versa down in Sydney. And we sort of helped, you know, a bit of each other back and forth. But he was on his own tip. He was killing it. And it's hard to deny Dietrich as an MC, you know.
It's fucking undeniable. But how was that? Like, was there a trickle down from the Blue Mountains down into Newtown?
It's like a hippie spot up there. And Newtown's also a bit lefty, hippie, arty, creative. Yeah. So there's like people would flock up there to get away from it. And then their kids would end up coming back down to it, you know, or we'd flock to get out of the city because we grew up in the city.
Yeah.
And basically it was all of us trying to hook up with each other's friends. I think was the main thing. It was just like, there was a lot of like interconnectedness then by that point. Cause it was like a whole new world of people like that, you know? So it was, and just like-minded crew, a huge hip hop influence in both spaces, you know? So there was just a flowback of that and that sort of mid 2000s and early before that as well. But they just had a solid head for rapping and cuts and beats, you know?
Oh, definitely. And there appeared to be so much coming out of the Blue Mountains. It was just like, what the fuck? Like, you know, like my mind would just be like, what goes on in that fucking, that area? We've had Dietrich on here and explaining it all and shit. But the formation of Big Village, man, get a bit more into that. Like just that fucking, how that collective comes together, you know, I mean, based out of necessity, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I think that was what it was, as well as this idea that we've got something to give and we think, you know, as a collective, we'd be more powerful to pull our resources together. And we were all mates. We're all, you know, connected as friends through, whether it was through music or just through extended people within the area, right? Or within the city. So it was a way to pull resources together, you know, because everyone could add a little bit, you know, something new to it.
Yeah.
And just get good music out, but there was and mix it properly and master it properly and get the artwork down and do all those things that you see other people doing that we just needed to reach that next level, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it just sort of started rolling. We put out something like 25, 30 like good solid releases within that maybe 8 years of going strong. Like there was a lot. There was crazy, like, and not all on wax, but like good solid albums of CDs. And we were getting them out. And at times, you know, we were selling a good amount, you know, but it was that mid range between, well, shit, we should be on the streaming stuff. And then suddenly you're just seeing a decrease like that. But yeah, the format was just, we rock parties. We got a good vibe. We want to create a safe, cool, fun space for people to hang out. We want to promote hip hop and like a diverse range of that as well as, you know, staying true to what we believe to be, you know, core elements to that. Mm. And having fun and getting out good quality music.
You seem to achieve like some sort of dominance around Sydney there for a while, because, you know, like obviously we know Basic Equipment going back and shit. But to me, like, you know, from an outside perspective, once again, it appeared like, you know, it was like fucking Big Village and Elephant Tracks almost being neck and neck coming out of Sydney, you know, in terms of quantity of releases, quality of releases, and then the success of those releases too.
Yeah, well, some of them definitely did better than others. Yeah. But even the smaller ones, we would still manage to push some units, you know.
What were you doing normally, like 1,000 copies, 500?
Yeah, look, we'd do minimums of 1,000 basically by the end of it, you know, and but some of those wouldn't take you years to get rid of as well, so you're not always, you still got a stack of records. But I mean, some of those Daily Meds ones, we were getting rid of 4,000 or 5,000 at a time, you know, like 100%, even the first Smurf EP, you know, was a few thousand. L Esquire, he smashed it. Suburban Dark, you know, definitely a few thousand of each of those, you know, when they were coming out. Some even the Big Village release. So it tallied up. And then the clothing, like it was the connection between like the fans, and who I'd say fans loosely, but like extended friends and community that turned into what they would all consider to be family, right? Because we were putting on these parties and they felt like they were part of it. And there's 13 of us running around talking and chatting with them and that, and just, and it, it's a reasonably friendly bunch the majority of the time, you know? So, and fucking, I think it was like people wanted to connect with that. They wanted to support us on that level. So we'd be selling merch, like, and pumping out those Big Village hoodies and the shirts and everything like that. And Rappaport had a good head for that and had a good head for business. Whereas, you know, other of us would cover different angles, but at the same time, I learned a lot through him, which I've tried to apply in my own label since then, since moving away from that. But yeah, I mean, this is it. There's some things some of us focus on because we enjoy those things, of course, and we're better and we've got heads in that. And so when you can grab those people together and do that. But yeah, I mean, at the same time, it was all, we're all coming. Yeah, I mean, Elephant Tracks is just, is the established thing that they have going, and that system is amazing, and good luck, you know. In a forever changing musical environment, you got to stay up and onto it. And it's so hard to do that. And we've all had side hustles in terms of working, you know. We never paid ourselves wages off that, you know. Basically, like, even as an artist and you're working it as a manager, you rarely pay yourself anything, you know. It all goes back into your music and that build, but it also grows the ability to charge more for a gig, or maybe to, you know, sell a bunch of shirts here and there and have that ongoing support network. Just trying to build a good, strong, solid support network without trying to just jump on things either, you know. We'd make music we'd want to make, stay current, but to a point that we like what we're doing, you know. I think that was a big thing about it. And people saw that and they were like, okay, cool, I'm down to rep this, you know. So you know, that community held it down for us massively, you know. And I think it was broad enough to be accepted by new crew, but solid enough to be respected by old heads who knew, you know, and like what we were doing, and would come out to our gigs, you know, and come and, you know, give the nod and go, word up, you know. Like the, you know, the Basic Equipment crew, you know. Like Rivals was one of the first dudes I'd see on stage jumping up to freestyle at the Lansdowne in like 2005, pre-18, with like Benji and Knee High and Rappaport and Rivals. Basic Equipment, he's on stage. You know, eventually he's hosting shows with me. Eventually, you know, Def Wish are coming down. You know, there's like a massive fuck up and everything's, you know, shuts down and there's only two mics left, and me and Rivals would beatbox and I'd rap for like 25 minutes until everything got sorted, and you get off and the boys would be like, you're on that shit. And I just remember those early head nods and those little, okay, we're in this, you know. And so they'd meet the crew and they'd give love to what we were doing. So we all felt like we were on the right tip, you know, at the same time.
Did I see, man, am I tripping, but did I see you and Rivals in the Game 2 doco?
Yeah, we both popped because we were hosting his 50th. That's right. And Spice's 50th. That's right. So my head was in there for a minute. It was when we were giving him the birthday cakes, you know, and Gaines got a cupcake.
That's
it's just
right.
like hilarious scene. It was just such an awesome event, right?
The fucking look on their faces, man.
It was classic. It was classic. But look, he had a really good time there. He was surrounded by his amazing mates, and she was as well. And they've been in it for so long together. And it was just a really good event. But during that thing, and I watched it back, the replay of that, I watched the movie when I went to the screening, and I wasn't saying anything because it's Rivals. Like he's been this mate. His mate for a long time. He was one of the first dudes to properly introduce me to Game back in the day, and so it was, you know, you could just, and Rob was such a heartfelt dude, you know, so it was just like, I'm just like nodding, waiting for a chance to freestyle at some point and just letting him do his thing, you know. But yeah, like, rest in peace, Gane, what a legend.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Any memories of it?
Yeah, like, well, the Freshly Squeezed days is something that always stood out to me, which was this monthly show, and it started off that I was running, started off at the Sando, Sandringham in Newtown, and Rivals was hosting it with me. And so he'd always, you know, we'd get Gane on the door. Gane would always be on at every gig. And he's the type of dude that you'd be like really stoked to have him there because other people wouldn't fuck around, basically, you know. The worst thing that could happen was he'd get a bit pissed and get a bit lippy generally, you know. But even that was like, he was really respectful to me. He was respectful to hip hop as a whole. He came and supported hip hop music as well, of his elements, you know, based. So and he'd give props. And my memories of him up the back, right hand. And when I'd see him, it would always be nod, shout out, you know, I'd say what up, someone would say what up, and it'd just be that chill, calm nod up the back. Just numerous gigs of him, him being there over the years, just supporting Benji and all these gigs and supporting, just supporting crew out there. He was a figure, you know? And okay, early Gane memory though, prior to that, was growing up in Erskineville, Newtown, and seeing his tags around. And my first early ones, I remember like coming back from McDonaldtown Station and have these like, sort of like export kind of gold tags, like just Gane. And like, I knew when I saw him, I'm like, I knew who that was. Like, I'd already known. And this is early, like early 2000s, like late 90s, early 2000s, when I just started seeing graph around there. Like Days, my boy Days would be putting pieces up everywhere. And BCF were huge down there at the time. And Puddle and Fibs and Demote and Snarl and all that. And Snarl was an old Newtown boy as well. And like a lot of that, they were all around the area. But Gane, I remember seeing that, and I'd walk around on the way home trying to keep finding where he was tagging. I'm like, oh, he's gone from here to there to there, and I'm there, and I'm like, and then I'd walk up Erko Road, and I'd be like, oh, there's more. And then you'd look down from Erko Road down to the bridge between Newtown and McDonaldtown, and there's a Gane 2-piece down the bottom, and I'm just like, fuck this guy, man, this is sick. And so from then you just see it everywhere as well. But yeah that infamous kind of notorious stays, you know.
Yeah.
And then eventually meeting him and, you know, probably in realizing that he was just a legend.
Yeah,
and, you know, so nothing but love for him.
Yeah, props to Rival, props to yourself, props to everyone involved. Well, you know, what was old mate's name? That old mate DM'd us on the Biz Beats and the Biz account, actually. Like, that's that movie, I watched it when it dropped on YouTube. Yeah, it was amazing, man. Great commemoration of the dude too.
100%.
You know? Like, absolutely. To all involved, you know. Once again, shouts to Rival and all everyone.
100%.
Can't remember old mate's name. Do you know who it was?
Look, I'm having a blank now.
Yeah,
me
too.
I can shout him out as well.
I can find it later. But yeah, big shouts to everyone involved in that Gane 2 documentary.
Did an amazing doco.
Yeah,
he
man.
Put it together so well. And it was going to be a doco on Sydney Graph, and it was Warcraft, and then it kind of evolved into being so focused on Gane. And then, you know, because he's such a prominent figure, like he's a king, and then it just evolved into that. And but those interviews with such candid interviews, like with Benji, with Thorn, with just everyone, with Skay, you know, everyone just was so humble on there. And like, felt the love in there, as well as just interesting in like understanding of Sydney and of Urching and of the undercurrents behind the graffiti scene there, so many interesting parts, and into his life generally.
For someone to have been interviewed on 60 Minutes in what, 88, 89? It's so, you know, and then, you know, to get that kind of background, like on his mum and all that sort of thing. Because I mean, I remember seeing that report. I got that report fucking sent to me years ago. I hadn't seen it when I was a kid, you know, and I don't even know that it was screened in Brisbane, but like seeing that news report, you know, and just watch it. It's just like, man, that's amazing.
Well, they were saying they'd like, it'd be passed around on VHS,
exactly,
you know, like that.
Yeah,
but yeah, it like gives you insight. It reminded me so much of other people that I know and have met throughout Sydney, and like I know and recognize all these aspects of that he'd had to come up through, you know. And it's so reminiscent of so many, you know, people, and relatable, but so individual and so different and so hectic,
of course,
you know. And it's an interesting insight into a lot of.
And his mum was as big a character as him, in that, you know, in that piece, you know, like that was just like, wow, man, that's amazing. And it's nice that they, you know, they even commemorate her in the in the doco. But, you know, sort of moving through that, and, you know, once again, massive props to all involved and rest in peace to Gain.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember when I saw him pass, I posted on social media, I was just like, man, like he's someone that I always thought about. I was like, oh, I should reach out to a Gain too. I'm just like, who do I reach out to? Where do I reach out? Mm. And, you know, 1 week leads into the next. Yeah. And it's just like, next thing you know, you start losing these people, man. And yeah. It's just like,
yeah.
You know, you miss out. It's yeah. fucking, it's tragic.
But, man, it's something you know, that's like another massive part about, I think hip hop is probably unspoken, is just the amount of death that people do go through, you know, because of the scene generally, not necessarily it's linked into that, but yeah. elements of it, you know, and just yeah. people go through that all the time in their yeah. lives. But man, it's been a massive part of my like life, especially in the last like 10, yeah. you know, to 15 years of watching yeah. people pass and from numerous things
yeah.
that have like were prominent in the hip hop scene as well, you know?
Well, cause I think like, you know, while we've moved into a far more positive direction in terms of hip hop and whatever else, I think in large part, it was an incredibly self-destructive lifestyle for a very
yeah.
long time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can only speak from personal yeah. experience, you know, yeah. and it's not that it needs to be, you know, and it doesn't promote self-destruction across the board.
No,
actually, the complete opposite.
Yeah, create, you know? Build, you know, and exactly. do, and find things that oppose those negative yes. elements, you know.
Yeah.
But it did stem out of a struggle,
yeah, yeah.
you know, massively.
Yeah.
And it's relatable to people in a struggle, whatever
yeah.
that is throughout the
yep.
world, their cultural groups, their countries,
yeah, yeah.
you know. And
yeah,
it's
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely linked into that, and yeah, it's broadened, and there's mm. all elements, but yeah, there's definitely that there's a big drug and alcohol issues, yeah, you know, is, there's, you know, and just that idea that you're going out to risk your lives in particular
yeah.
times and places, yeah,
situations,
you know, graffiti artists going out and, you know, killing it,
all day,
you know, and yeah. big ups to them, you know, it's, yeah. It's amazing. Like, if people can pay for a billboard to be up on the side of the road, why can't we have pieces up, you know? And Sydney just buffs everything, and you're just like, right. what are we doing?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
where's
yeah.
the art, you know? You yeah. go to Melbs and you're just like, damn, it's yeah, everywhere. Crazy, and it, yeah. you know, but this is, it's a different culture that's created throughout that as well, you know, in a different way that people, the public view that. So it's always on the back foot, you know, mm-hmm. or you're always looked at as, you know, an outcast or something
yeah,
like that,
some
even, even sure. though, you know, it's definitely become a lot more palatable and mainstream
yeah, yeah, yeah.
in any, some yeah. elements of it anyway, you know,
yeah,
but,
definitely.
But yeah, I mean, I've lost a lot of good mates over the years, and it's just, it's a crazy thing to go through, but it's amazing that people can cement themselves and feel and be remembered and supported throughout that community and going to some of these funerals and feeling that connection at the wakes and the places, you know, it's mm. strong. There's a strong link there. People coming in and out of cities and states to come and, you know, pay respects. And
yeah.
it's a beautiful community generally.
Yeah. It is, man. It yeah. is. It is. Generally speaking, it fucking is. It yeah. absolutely is. But, you know, sort of going back to the Big Village stuff, like where what's the tail end of Big Village? Is that when the digital kind of comes through? You were saying he didn't really pick up on the digital early, or like what?
Look, I don't know. Like, we tried to keep up to date with what was going on, but as you said, you've all got to work jobs, you've all got relationships, yeah. you've all got your own music that you got to push. It sort of stemmed from 12 or 13 of us, 13 doing management and trying to combine as much as possible while we released into about in 2010 until about 2014, when it came to about four of us kind of managing it, yeah. four or five. It was like myself and Rolio, True Vibe Nation Boys, Beggy and Gabs and Rappaport, and then that eventually came down to me and Rappaport doing the management. Mm. And then, you know, I've had an idea. It was actually so I was watching the episode with Sleeping Monk, and I'm just thinking about it. Sleeping Monk, I was at DMC's with him or something one night, and he's like, bro, you should start your own label up, mate. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I reckon you should. Yeah. I reckon you should. And literally within like 3 weeks, I get this message off this guy, Mark, who ran a rock label called Golden Robot Records yeah. out of Sydney. He's like, oh, look, I want to, you know, talk to you about potentially collabing on a project, or maybe, you know. And after meetings with him and realizing that, you know, Rappaport didn't want to kind of merge in any way with this guy, even though we'd kind of, we had issues, you know, personal issues and business related issues. Cause like I'd known him since I was like 15, he was going out with my sister. We were rapping in the Phonies. We were in the group called Sketch the Rhyme. We started Big Village together. We were like closely related, but opposing figures in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But that helped balance us in terms of the way we'd manage and react. But, you know, that all would also create conflict. So eventually it was kind of like, we didn't see the eye to eye on a few things. I'd be on tour, maybe not fulfilling my duties as a manager, yeah, and maybe playing the artist card,
yeah,
a bit too hard, you know, yeah, and not, and you know, you're all going through, we're all going through our things, and you sometimes, yeah, don't live up to expectations of what people need out of you or this and that. And so eventually it was just like, look, I'm gonna step away.
Yeah.
And like the, all even the business side of things was not even all finalized. He basically owned it, but gave me a section of, he gave me all the, my masters back, gave his records. I then split them up with some of the crews and this and that. And we figured out a deal. It was just like, cool, amicable. I got nothing but love for him, yeah, you know? And you know, we're still connected. It was just that time. It just needed to kind of, I needed to step back. And in doing that, I helped, you know, started this label with this other guy. That was, you know, there was some difficult things in there, you know, as well, because we started right during COVID and, yeah, trying to figure out how funding was coming and how money was going to come back and how I'm going to pay him back and, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So eventually it took a couple of years of that for me to sort of step back and go, look, I want to run this myself. How do we do that? And he understood that, because we also weren't probably doing what we initially thought we would do for each other, yeah, on his end, you know, wasn't much money coming back in on these particular things, you know, yeah, and I'm looking for a long game and not as much of a short game, yeah, you know, cause I'm thinking, let's create, you know, let's continue on a culture and not try and rush into getting people on that I don't like or agree with, or, you know, just like want to push their music and this and that. So it was just, yeah, eventually we separated, and from, as a business, I've now running the business myself, focusing more on the record shop probably than ongoing releases, but we've got releases on the go, just working one project releases with people. Same with Big Village. It was like a 50-50 cut, you know, of profit. Try and put in and collab on one release, not, yeah, sign people up to two or three, trying to get people to do things they don't want to do,
yeah,
and just try to work on projects with people and, yeah, help where you can, you know, in a realm where people are getting a lot more individual and able to do these things on them, on their own, compared, yeah, to 10 course. Or 15 years ago, where you can,
yeah,
you can get your press release, yeah, you can make these things, you can use ChatGPT for all this shit now anyway. Yeah, but, yeah, so, yeah, I was, yeah, like, yeah, you know, yeah, if you, yeah, want to do all these things,
yeah,
but not always, you need guidance, and that's it about that, you know, and hip hop, you're coming up off, mm, older heads are like helping, mm, and giving you, mm, offering advice and this, mm, and that. So it's nice to be able to do that as well, mm, but it's still, yeah, just seeing where I can help,
mm,
who we're going to work with. And it's, yeah, and it not rushing to do, exactly, anything either. You know, yeah, I'm just working on
the, it never hurts to have a team, you know, a lot of labels, yeah, form around that team.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like, you know, a lot of labels are just born out of, there's a team of individuals involved in the music that's being created, and one person excels in this,
yeah,
and the other person's great at that, and, for that, sure, person's good at that.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you form a label around that. And it's like you said, exactly, man, these days, at this point in time, there isn't the necessity for a label. Like,
yeah,
there just isn't, man. You know, there's that many ways to get your music out there now.
I completely agree. But on the flip, if you want to just, yeah, focus on your artistry,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
then you should, you be able to delegate. Yeah, yeah, delegate, yeah, these jobs. And I'm learning, yeah, a lot more about that as well, not doing things that I don't naturally feel inclined to do.
Exactly.
And, yeah, if there's someone out there who does and is, yeah, really good at that, then it's like, okay, let's figure out a way that I can make enough money to, mm, pay them to do the things by doing the things I want to do,
mm,
and then, you know, delegate work, as well as going, okay, can I, if I just put in a little bit of time, I could probably figure out how to do this,
yeah,
you know, and you,
yeah,
can, and there's, yeah, ways to around that as well, yeah, which saves, because there's just not much money in any of this,
yeah,
you know, and so you've got to kind of figure out how to go about it, you know. Well, there is, it just depends on how you do it and what you, and how you want to do it,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
but, yeah, for me, I'm just still, yeah, just keeping it chilled. As,
yeah,
you know, delusions of grandeur. I just enjoy doing what I'm doing, and it's just a steady build. I just want to keep doing.
That's it, eh?
Doing what I enjoy doing. Running. Yeah, yeah, keep that's it.
Yeah. So you found yourself, what, you know, like, were you adverse to the management role? Like, were you just more, were you always more the artist than the manager?
Look, I think I really like putting on events, and I became the event manager.
Yeah, right.
More focused on that,
yeah,
but while staying over on board on all these other aspects, the financials and the marketing and these things, I'm, you know, I'm on the streets, you know, talking to people, chatting with people, making kind of things happen a little bit more like that. My office based stuff wasn't up to par, you know, trying to do budgeting and spreadsheeting. It's like, oh my God, that's not, yeah, my favorite thing to be doing, and spending, yeah, my time doing that. And when, yeah, you're not really getting anything out of it other than experience and more control over your own things, which, yeah, is great. Yeah, but it wasn't my first and foremost, you know. I felt a bit more on the, you know, human connect level and that, which also feeds into the music. But it is really to be able to talk to people about how you want things to be and to be able to know about those things, that's great. So if you can get across the board knowledge and then start delegating instead of working with people and having them take the reins and you not know what's going on, and then usually you get fucked over. Or, you know, you're not usually, but you may potentially be agreeing to things that you don't even know what you're agreeing to, you know? And that's always going to happen. I'm still doing that. I'm still learning so much, you know? And never pretend to have any idea about the people who work in an industry as an industry member and not a musician. I'm a musician first and foremost, you know. I'm a youth worker, but I'm a rapper, like an MC. I'm an, you know, and I do manage a business, but I'm an MC, like first and foremost, 100%. And that's what I feel more naturally inclined to be doing and spending my time. And I feel it's beneficial as well, because I feel like what I got to say is worth saying. I feel like the parties we rock are worth going to.
Yeah,
you know. So but I also understand the benefit in being self-sustainable and being able to know how to go and flow within the industry as if that's what you want to be doing as an artist.
Yeah, 100%.
It's good to be knowledgeable.
And do you find that you now have to, like, you know, because what always interests me, man, is like people that do multiple things. You know, you might be an MC, but you're in youth work, you're running a store, you're fucking managing, you're doing this. Do you have to be multifaceted at this point in time to fucking navigate
in this day and age?
In this day and age,
generally,
straight up,
we all do, right?
It's
heavy, but that's cool, and it gives you that control. That's all good. I mean, it's just, this is how things change. It's kind of hard to, you can't just go back on anything that's happening. This is the world we're kind of living in. It's just about picking and choosing what is important to you and where you want to focus your energy and time into. And if that's stepping back away from things and focusing on these elements, going back to just the music and releasing it for fun, or you know, releasing it at the pace you want to, and not trying to keep up with a single drop every 2 months because that's the way to do it. And releasing singles that are singles, they have no, they just, there's no like chill parts of music anymore. It's just like a constant barrage of what's killing it, you know. And it's, I don't feel the need to do that anymore as much as I probably did. But at the same time, I feel the need to get music out, and I've got a lot of backlog of stuff that I'm waiting to smash, and I feel like I got years left in me of doing what I want to do. So I mean, that's still there. It's just sometimes you've got to
diversify
and maneuver through it. And I want to maintain as someone who can continue to perform and put on gigs and you know, work within the industry and help and potentially help manage people on the way along like that, you know.
But
mentoring as a whole, and mentoring through the music workshops is great, because I don't have to be as specific. It's like, I'm gonna go in there, we have to write a song about this. It's like, I'll see people every week, like, what do you want to know, what do you want to do this week, how do we help you progress as an artist? And being able to have an industry knowledge, a bit of that, being able to work on a bit of beats with them, work on, you know, different elements, it helps in that kind of overall scope of helping young people come up through and navigate the game as well.
Absolutely. Well, fuck, you've got the experience, dude.
Like, it's enough of a degree, you know. But it's always remained an underground kind of event, but I've poked my head up in little bits and places and been able to, you know, see some cool things along the way.
Where does Daily Meds, like, at what point do you sort of go, okay, fuck, I'm going solo? Or like, how's that?
Oh, like,
is that around the Big Village?
I was around mid 2015, you know. It's just a lot of, you know, big personalities and a lot of, you know, stressful situations, and just eventually it just became, we had to go part ways and do our own thing, you know. It's just kind of like, it's just, that's it. It's a build-up of trying to do our own lives and live within this, you know, scene, and, you know, so many stresses from outboard that we're all going through, that interpersonal, and it just, you know, it came to a head, and we just, you know, felt it was time to step back. You know, which, you know, at the time, you know, we had a lot of amazing music, had a lot of fans, and a lot of room to continue growing. But, you know, the hardest thing to do within a band is keep it together, I think, generally. You know, and the successful bands are the ones that have been together for 10 to 15 to 20 years, because the name's been out there for so long, you know. So, it's I love creating with groups of people, and I love that crew. I love Meds, and I love Reverse Polarities, and I love all the Big Village crew. But it, being able to step back from that and focus a little bit more on on my own styling and figure out, you know, narrow down who I am as an artist and what, how I want to come across and what music I want to make and who I want to make it with has been awesome as well, you know? Yeah. But yeah, generally it was just a culmination of things that, you know,
yeah.
It's just time to jump out.
Yeah. You know, when it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many releases you guys have?
Man, it was a successful little crew for that 5 years. Like we did the EP in 2010, just as Big Village started. Happy Days came out in 2012, which got like a bit of success. We got, you know, a bit of play on the radio with the track called Insane, and we got into the Amp Music Awards and the top 12 of that, and we're getting a bit of love out of that. And then we dropped Sour Milk in 2014, which probably didn't get as much love, and there's also another reason. It's like, you know, we're all trying to do things, you know, and it's, we're putting relationships aside. We're prioritizing this over our own financial stability and our own personal relationships with each other and with our friends and family, you know, and then you're aiming to try to hit these marks. And when those marks don't hit and you just fucking put everything into it, you're like, oh fuck, do we do it again? How are we going to go in again? You know? And then, you know, things do turn from this idea of let's make music as friends into how do we continue to make this rise up, you know, and that shifts dynamics, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and as I said, we're all just, it was a full on time.
Yeah.
We're all
full
on people, and you know, just keeping that together can be difficult.
And I imagine if you're trying to run a label and use a, you know, you would be the, well, would you be the marquee act on the label?
Well, yeah. I mean,
in some regard.
I think at particular points, potentially, 100%.
So when you're, you know, when you're running a label and then, I mean, you're at the helm of a label, then you are the marquee act on the label. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, a priority that goes into your music. Well, not necessarily. I mean, see, I don't know the dynamic in Big Village, but, you know, that's how, you know, over the years I've seen it personally in terms of, you know, when there's a lot of effort going into one release and then another release is coming on the back of that release, maybe there isn't as much effort going into that release, you know, because, man, you do fucking burn out at a point.
For sure.
It's like you said, you're trying to hit these fucking marks and everything else is kind of falling by the wayside as you do.
Yeah.
You know, like relationships are breaking down, even friendships, whatever the fuck, you know.
Oh, man, this mental stress that it places on you as an artist, you know, especially in a scene that's not catered to support all the artists out there. We've got a small amount of people in this population and the market, although it can be big and you do see artists pop off and rise up to the top, there's only so many spaces that can be filled in award ceremonies, in radio slots, in, you know, articles, you know, in blog sites, blah, 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 you know. And then you can see how fast people are coming through and dropping off these days as well. It's like you have to remain this active kind of basis or you just get washed out. And and that was never our initial key. It was just, we loved jamming together and we loved each other and we loved making music, you know. It's just these things just, you know, it becomes stressful and it creates pressure on everyone, you know.
Yeah.
And then we blow out, you know.
Do you feel the necessity to maintain, like in terms of staying out there? Like do you, I mean, we always talk relevance and all that kind of shit, you know, and then the social media push and all that kind of thing. I mean, relevance seems to be, it's fickle, you know, it's fucking, what was relevant yesterday is no longer relevant today. It's as quick as that. You know, like how do you, you know, I mean, you know, in terms of relevance, I quite often think, man, as long as you stay active, you remain relevant to those you're active for. Within.
Yeah, you know, that's it. The people that you're making music for, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think, look, coming up through my 20s, and I'm 35 now.
Yeah.
So I started off pretty young and around a lot of older heads, you know, and that was always how I kind of rolled through. And it's funny to feel like I'm an older head now, because I still feel like a really young head, you know?
Yeah.
But, and that relevance of like watching people blow up around me, you know, it can get to a point where I'm like, why am I jealous here? Like, what's the actual feeling here? I should be happy. They're my mateys.
Yeah.
You know, Thunder's blowing up, Sticky Fingers blowing up, you know, but dudes that are like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm loving that. And I'm just like, okay, cool. What's the pressure here? What am I putting on myself? And what do I really want to achieve here? And then just a lot of like searching for soul searching for the answers and what you want. And I'm like, ultimately it was, I believe that I've got music that's worth listening to, so I want to put it out. I still think I'm a good MC. I still think I can fucking rock better shows than a majority of motherfuckers that I've seen. I'll go do that. And yeah. I've, you know, not to sound, you got to have a bit of an ego in this shit, or otherwise you wouldn't continue doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also actually feel like that people enjoy what I'm doing. So to stay relevant, I think will be, you know, continuing to make music that I enjoy doing, mm-hmm. put it out at my pace, do what I, you know, and also be open to, you know, doing different stylings, but staying true to where you're at. Mm-hmm. But if that's what you want to do, and you're doing drum and bass, it's not like it's a new thing. Mm. It's not like it's some modern, everyone's going to jump on it now. It's like, I just love doing D&B with Monkey. That's Matt, you know?
Yeah.
You know, garage and loving that tip, you know, I love smashing grind bars and doing that tip as well. You know, it's awesome. And I wasn't, you know, it's funny because when Daily Meds was quite a current sound and to 10 to 15, all I wanted to do was go make some boom bap. Yeah, and then that, playing the blues in 2018 was like, I want to do an album with Musty and Platypus and Codex. Yeah. I just want them on the beats. And I was like, that was the opposite to what I probably should have been doing to remain current or, you know, at that time in the regard. But then it's also, it links up with all these other heads, and there's a whole wave of boom bap heads out there. Just want to smash that shit too. And you know, coming up 5 years later going, bro, I heard your album. It's mad. Like, you know, and so that's still remaining. That's still there. That's locked in. Hopefully that'll, it's not going anywhere, and my music's not going anywhere. And if you listen to some of the Meds shit, it was well ahead of its time generally, you know, I think personally. I mean, but that was only because Rolio made these fat beats, and I grew up with that lad, and he was one of my oldest mates, and tagged together. We've known each other since we were seven, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and he's making these bangers. I was just like, let's start a crew with you, you know?
Yeah.
And that, you know, that actually came out of, you know, some issues, you know, Mute had to step away from Reverse Polarities for a while. And we're like, okay, well, let's go in and we'll start this crew with Mick and with Bill and Rolio. And that was just, you know, because, and it was fun to do. But staying current, I think, is only if you enjoy the style of beats. And if you want to rap over those beats, do it. If you don't rap over those beats, because it's going to sound shit.
And people
can see through that quickly, I think, when you're doing that or making these songs that, you know, are just there because it's like similar to what everyone else is doing at the time, right?
But because I think like, I agree. Like, I think, you know, you can reach a certain age and, you know, maybe relevancy or, you know, the feeling of relevancy comes into play. But I think, man, if you're just true to yourself, you will forever remain relevant in whatever capacity. Like, you know, in you know, even if the fan base doesn't grow beyond what the fan base maybe is. Well, I think it always does. I don't know, man. As long as you're just consistent, you know, and this shit goes in waves anyway, man. This shit goes in fucking cycles. You see, there's renaissances towards fucking everything. Yeah. And it's only now that we hear that there's grime, there's boom bap, there's fucking trap, there's fucking boom, boom, boom. You go through the list of subgenres in fucking local based hip hop alone now. You know, it's just like, what the fuck?
100%.
And if you're fucking true to your voice, you're true to your sound, man, you're going to be good. You're good forever, man.
100%. You know? And that should be open enough to those particular signs. It doesn't need to be the one thing that's popping at the moment, even though drill's definitely that at the moment, and we'll see what happens in the next couple of years and what becomes that current part. But, I mean, yeah, I don't feel the need, I guess, going back to the idea about watching other people blow up and this and that. I don't feel the same need to have to prove something, but I get the whole idea behind, prove that we can make good music and prove that there's bang. It's not a competition for me as much anymore. I still, on the mic, I'm still like competing to like smash this set and nail everyone who played that night and fucking, you know, do the thing, you know, be the best at this event or whatever. And but it's not for as much of a reason, like I don't know. I don't feel it's the same for me anymore. It's just I wanted to be the best I can be still and continue to make music that I want to make and up my game each time kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
More competing with myself, I guess.
Dude, that's it. Yeah. That's it. And that's what it is, you know. I think that's exactly it, bro.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. But that's where you find comfort too at a point.
Yeah.
In that competition with yourself.
For sure.
Oh, fucking A.
And then that lack of jealousy that, you know, if you can raise yourself from these negative feelings and just kind of hope the best for everyone, regardless of what you've gone through, regardless of what you think of their music, or regardless of, you know, anything, there's negative things that creep into your head. It's kind of just being like, okay, come on, we're all in this together. You know, and the trickle down effect that comes from, you know, your extended peers or people within the scene making music, anyone in this country, if that's exposing people to music in the country or you know, it's a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
It always comes back down, you know, and people will find what they want to listen to. Yeah. Most heads and listeners out there, well, not heads, most just people who consume music seem to just listen to whatever's being played to them. But there's definitely, you know, and you get these Spotify playlists that'll just play you apparently what you want to hear, right? But there's a shitload of people out there who dig and find and they want to go and source out the specific shit that makes them, you know, vibe, you know?
Yeah.
And there's definitely still a market out there for that.
And
there's definitely, you see people who benefit from that, you know? Over the years, the amount of people who've come up and said, damn, man, like, appreciate that song, or I appreciate that, you know, thing that you said and did this. And this, so it's like, you know, that's there. You know that's happening. It doesn't need to be.
Yeah,
on this other scale of, you know, some people who, they might have a bunch of people who like their music, but how much of an effect is it having? I don't know. Like, so I don't know. There's just different ways of looking at.
And there's a lot of fucking people out there, man.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of ears to reach. Yeah, you know, a lot of, and everyone's different.
100%. And as it grows to the world, there's more people in the world as well. You know, that are like catching on to the fact that we've got pro stylings here of all styles. You know,
How do you hook up with Musty?
We did shows together, oh man, like late 2000s, I reckon, initially, in Melbourne. And I'm linked up with Mantra and 1/6 when they were in Illzilla. And we do gigs with them, Mantra's band Illzilla, and 1/6 would rap with them. And then so I was close with 1/6. And then he started linking more with Musty, Matter and Must. So I was doing gigs with Matter and Must. And then I think early 2000s. Around 2011 or 12, I was going down there. I'd be linking up with Raw Authentic Crew, P-Link. So I became good mates with them. They come up to do a 5-6-7 party. So P-Link and J-Mac and Down Pat, my bros, and they were connecting with them at the time, with Musty a lot at the time as well. And so then, you know, I'd go down to gigs with them, hang out, hit up Musty, go around, play a beat. It was actually coming out of, I think, a Rainbow Serpent and around. Yeah, I was doing some gig and I was croaky like this. I was coming out and they're super boom bap heads and I'm just like, and they're super chilled and him and Cootsie just laying back, blazed, in the studio and I'm coming up like, what's going on? But they're super chilled and they, you know, we got along real well. So we'd just be able to chill and lay on a beat. And I remember that was probably the first time we made a track together.
You know, it was around. Authentic Boys? Where's P-Link and all them?
P-Link's back down in Phillip Island.
Oh, right.
So he's got a bub. He's got a fish and chip shop down there. He's killing it down there at the moment. Apparently, he's been a bit out of like the general hip hop scene as much as he was, but he's still rolling on releases.
Yeah. He was even Trem's hype man for a minute there.
Fucking hell, man!
Term of his natural life tour.
Such a legend, you know.
Good MC, good dude.
So good. And he held down that crew and he's very proactive, you know. And I think, you know, he's just taken a step back, moved back to his home spot, and he's running his business and running the fam life, you know, being a good dad. He's a chef as well, right? He's running that business. Same with J-Mac. And J-Mac's up north, down Pat is still in Melbs.
Shouts to all those boys.
Killing it. They were so good. We'd link up. They'd take us to Phillip Island, run up to Sydney. We'd do gigs in Melbourne and just started linking with Discourse around that time around that and becoming mates with all that crew as well. With the Crate Cartel.
Yeah.
Shouts to Pang and Crate Cartel and BTE and, you know, all the lads down in Melbourne. I felt a good connect with them because my mum grew up in Melbourne, so she left when she was like 21. Her family's all from Melbourne. I've been going down there my entire life.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I hit 18, it was like, I've got to go suss this joint out as an adult, you know? Yeah. So I was always going down to do gigs. We did like a Melbourne Fringe Festival, I think, for a week down there performing. And I got to spend a lot of time with boys down there, 10, 11 years ago. And just kind of, cement that scene, with that scene. The Fringe.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was just like, it was that Sketch the Rhyme show I was talking to you about, right? So we were just doing this thing in the hall up north. It was sick. Like, we just toured with that so much and it was diverse kind of crowds. But who'd come down? I know Mantra was off with us doing that one. There was a couple other local. I don't know, Peg's come to one of those gigs. He didn't jump up with us.
Yeah.
But we were still hitting heads up. Yeah, there were still hip-hop heads coming down through for that. And Yeah, no, it was cool. Like I always love coming to Melbourne, that's, you know, right, yeah. And I love coming up to Brizzy. And I've always, yeah, as I said, with you and who's, when they had the fort up there and they put us up there, and I'd, yeah, stay up there back in the day. And
fuck, did you come up? Did you at the fort?
Yeah, we played gigs there. And no, yeah, shit. Yeah, it was, yeah, sick. Yeah, yeah. Early, that would have been 2011 or something, yeah, like that, around that time, even, yeah. Yeah. Even before, around that. And then, yeah, we do some Daily Meds gigs with them as well, like Mustang Bar and.
No shit. Yeah,
yeah. We played with you and who's.
Yeah.
Yeah, around that time.
Mm. Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
And Bankrupt Billionaires, Kel on Earth, would always look out for us and, yeah, as well, and put us on shows and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have an early connection with that sort of, yeah, yeah, that lineage, yeah, of Brisbane.
Yeah. Before you and boosted out, you know, and, yeah, then with Sketch the Rhyme, it was that, because he'd be like, "We love this show, come up and do it." And that's initially when I met him.
Yeah.
And yeah, Cryptomystic. Master Wolf would jump up, and yeah, they put us up for like a week up here back, yeah, in the day. That was probably my first connect with them. And I, yeah, love you and love what he's doing overseas. And,
yeah, man.
And just like, yeah, solid head. And
yeah, he's always fucking good dude, man. Great dude. And, yeah, a friend. You know, yeah. Like, big shouts to you and who's if he fucking tunes in. Or
yeah, 100%. I'd love to see that man again.
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how long's he been over there? Like,
I think it's been South a bit America. 10 years around. Yeah, yeah, for, yeah, sure.
Shouts him. What's he calling himself now? Seed of Light or something like that? Mm. Something like that? Or he's going under some other name or something like that.
I wouldn't
know. Someone said to me he's putting music out.
Yeah.
Whatever. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, big shouts to you and who's, you know, super shouts to you and who's. Yeah. But how are you being received on this fucking tour, dude? Like, as you're going around the country now. Well, you know, how many dates you doing?
I didn't go too many with Tuna. Yeah. It was more just Earth Freak in Sydney. So I haven't managed to get out enough as I'd like to, but if I actually tried to ring through the amount of gigs I've still managed in the last few years, I've been around a bit,
yeah,
you know. But yeah, first time in Brizzy in a while. I think Flaming Galah was the first
time. Joking. I
played really? Up here a few years back,
yeah.
Big Things Tour with like Mathis and Omar Nusa. But yeah, it's been a while, so it'd be nice to come down and smash a gig in Brizzy soon as well, yeah, you know. Dude. But just generally, obviously, it was hard for 4 years, yeah, touring, doing anything, getting out. So,
yeah
I'm ready to kick it back on.
Yeah. You know? How'd you wind up on, how'd you wind up doing two fucking rapper tags? You got two rapper tags.
Well, that's what I was saying, because I was in this, like, I felt like I was in a weird bracket of hip hop, right? Mm. Like, I come up in this age bracket that I was like, I don't know, I've always felt like I was with the older heads, but I was a younger head, and then wasn't in the younger. I don't know. So somehow I've managed to fluctuate between the two.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's awesome. If that's some sort of thing of notoriety, I'll take it.
Yeah.
They were all right. Rapid tags, basically. Well, Def Wish, the boys tagged in Trem, you know, and then Trem, you know, didn't, you know, said he didn't want to do it, and then the boys were like, "Cool, we'll tag you in," and that was what 2012 or something like that, 2013, and yeah, it was nice to be asked up. You know, there's so many Sydney heads that, you know, Def Wish and that could have hit up at the time, you know. But I did have a good, solid connect with those guys, and, you know, on a mental level, on a musical level, and, you know, a lot of chills and a lot of hangs with those guys. And I respected them so much for what they have done in the Sydney scene, staying strong and having that all element coverage and, you know, just legends, you know, Sarek and Pabs and, you know, Simon always looking out for us and Murder One and Tommy Rock and all that.
They've brought up a lot of people around them. You know, like they've raised a lot of sons out there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's any disrespect to call any one of us sons of Def Wish
Coast. No, 100%.
I throw myself in the mess, you know, in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
You know, without fail. Like they've raised a lot of fucking artists in this country.
No doubt.
And if you just go to Sydney, man, the influence is just everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? they're diverse enough of a sound, but like staying strong to their roots. And I think, you know, that's opened up people, you know, but they're, you know, into different stylings and different, you know, potential Sydney sounds that come with that. But, but at the same time, you know, they're just true to the art, you know, and they've been supportive to younger heads, you know, if they believe that they're on the right tangent. If they don't, they'll offer advice and offer words, and they're not going to go out and, you know, have to chase it up. But I think they have that sort of point of reference, you know, for us. So no, that's it's they're legends. Love them to death.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Yeah, big shouts to everyone. Yeah. Man, like, fuck, dude. I thought that that latest rapper tag was dope.
Oh, the other one. Oh, yeah. So
that's in scratches, doing. Eh?
Yeah, that was in the record shop. Yeah.
And you got everyone just going through wax and just going through things. Yeah. But, you know, it also speaks to me on the level, like, you know, you just rap from fan perspective. You're just like the names in there. I love that shit.
I look back at it, I probably should have put in a few more, like, artists, like local artists in that rhyme, but it was just like, I was just writing for, like, what was in the store and what I love and, like, blah, 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 and I was penning that. And I guess how it came about on the second one was Joe Snow asking me, and Joe Snow actually Musty put me onto Joe Snow when he first moved into Melbourne. He first come over from Leeds, you know, Defenders of Style crew from Leeds, dope, making big moves over there, came out with his missus, and he just moved in, and Must was like, I've got this lad, you know, Joe Snow, I reckon you guys get along. Yeah, he's coming up to Sydney. His missus family's from up there. I'm going to link up. And I'm like, 100%. Like, send him up to the warehouse. And he comes up, knocks on the door. I remember, like, we hadn't spoken. Like, we'd barely, like, a couple of things online. And checked each other's tunes out. It was just like that. Within 5-10 minutes, we're penning bars.
Yeah.
Like, having a beer. Like, within, you know, a few hours, we'd laid down this track fresh to death. Yeah. And it was just, and then we're chatting about things. And, like, we're, like, it was on. Like, this guy is dope. So, initially, that was my connection with Joe. And then Joe was the one who tagged me in on the second rapper tag. And that was coming out of the Pang Productions camp, basically Coots before that.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know that we've helped each other out on numerous projects and just like, just a solid dude, you know, and always I'll hit him up when I'm coming to Melbourne and vice versa. And I just respect him as a person and an artist a lot. So it was nice for him to, you know, just make a call out, you know, hopefully on the fact that he knew I'd burn it as well as the fact that, you know, we got a good link. But that was coming out of 10th Dan as well. And I know because 10th Dan, I think, tagged in Coots.
Yeah.
And they're in Bugs Brothers together. So 10th Dan, who was in the Insidious drop as well, he's from Big Village crew. So there's someone I didn't shout out initially as well. He was on the first Big Village album. He featured on most records that we put out.
Well, 10th Dan.
10th Dan, yeah. He was in the Posse cuts that we did. He was like, he featured on mostly all our compilation records, most of the albums on there. So 10th Dan's like our boy from the mountains from way back. He's a couple years younger than me. So he's like probably the youngest kind of person coming up in that.
And makes some amazing music, man.
And he's just been nailing it the last few years, you know. He went through some heavy stuff as a, you know, with some grief in his life, and then, you know, got to a point, you know, had a child. And, you know, decided that, you know, this is his time to start pumping out tunes, after featuring and just being such an amazing feature in so many things, you know.
Yeah.
So big props to 10th, 10th day. Yeah. Oh, I just forget what that
I don't even know. Started. I don't even know myself. Joe Snow.
So, and then he linked up with the Pang Boys, and then they did Bugs Brothers together.
That's right.
Which is, you know, it was a killer release. And then that went into Coots. Coots tagged Joe, and Joe tagged us, you know. And I tagged Barker because she's dead set, one of my favorite MCs in the country at the moment.
Yeah.
I think that was, you know, and it was awesome to see her and see her killing it as well.
Dude, is it still going?
Yeah, I think it dropped off somewhere along that line.
But you murdered that shit, dude.
Oh, well, look, I'll probably be to blame for it dropping off. But, you know, so apologies to all those real, you know, heavy rapper tag heads. But you know, these
things
do happen.
What happened with the first one?
Same shit. It just dropped off, as far as I know. I don't know.
Someone didn't
put it out. Yeah. It kept going. Like,
Joyce?
Well, you come like. I did Jess One, and then
Jess
come into a few other people. Big shouts to Jess One. Love that, bro. Nookie ended up doing Miko, and ended up doing a couple other people ended up going on after that. Hijack, big shout out to Hijack. He did one after me as well, but I think it just trailed off somewhere, you know.
Was Hijack on there too?
Hijack did end up doing one. Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, he's another Sydney legend, you know. And
yeah, dude.
I got, you know, it took us a couple of years to get, you know, former connect, you know, but it was about 2010 where he come up and he was just like, look, I see you doing stuff.
I want to
do gigs again. Let's link, you know. And he hit me up and jump on his albums and that. And
I asked a friend of mine recently, like actually fucking, man, very recently, like in the last week or so. I was like, fucking Hijack. What happened to that dude?
He's doing all right, man.
He's just doing good?
He's doing good. He's still making tunes. I'm still running into him around the spot. Is that right? Still saying what up.
He's a fucking legend, man.
Bro, he's dead set. easily one of the best freestylers I've ever heard in my life. True, and like his ability to rock a free in any regard is amazing. But just I just had a funny story about like getting us on tracks, going back to 10th Dan.
Yeah.
So 10th Dan was Dietrich's hype man, so Dielectric's hype man. And then he was helping with that, you know, early days. And while he was on Big Village and, you know, we were always trying to get him to do an album. He was doing bits and pieces. And then Dietrich's calls me up one night, like cold light of day before that release. And just like, bro, got to get the masters finished for my album in like 2 days. He's like, I got this track, you know, 10th Dan's supposed to be on it. He just hasn't pulled through. He's like, you keen to jump on? I'm like, bro, like fucking Dietrich's like, man, yeah, of course I am. He's like, you just got to have it recorded tonight. you gotta have it over to us by tomorrow night. I'm like, bro, are you serious, bro? I'm like, you want me to try to match your verse and Tupac's verse within like 24 hours? You're putting pressure on me here, bro, but of course I'm gonna take that. So props to 10th Dan for not jumping on that one. That's the only way I ended up on that album, you know. But man, I was like, bro, next time we do a track, we got on the Daily Meds record, Dietrich's, he smashed that. But that was the pressure was on. I was bro, you're killing me. Next time, give me like a week or something. Give me a couple of days, you know?
A little more than 24 hours.
It was killing me. Killing me.
Listen, brother, I'm going to fucking wrap it just because I got to get back to work, man. But listen, I can't thank you enough for being here. Like, where do people find you? Dude, is there anything you want to speak on before we get out?
Man,
what should we touch on?
Look,
we missed any of them?
Look, I mean, this is it. I was just thinking we'd come in and have a chat. I had no specifics other than, you know, saying what up. It's nice to meet you.
Absolutely.
You know, properly. Absolutely. And nice to be invited up into this dope spot as well. But just, you know, big shout outs to all the Scratches crew and, you know, everyone who's been helping us out over the years, all the Big Village heads, you know, and everyone who's still coming out to gigs and coming and support the shop and, you know, just doing their thing, you know, and just getting through. Life is hard at the moment. It's a struggle. You just got to keep spreading that love and peace and, you know, big ups to all the fam who've, you know, been in and out of my space and time and give us a bit of, give a bit of space to, you know, make music still and rock out. So I'm all good. I'm just, hope everyone is as well. You know, I just want to, you know, keep it shiny outlook, you know.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. No, it's the best way to be, man. It's the best way to be. And you know, just the fucking community you yourself are building around Scratches Records and all that sort of shit, man.
And the Sydney, all that Sydney scene as well as everyone, you know, throughout the extended community that's helped accept us on that, you know. Big love to the Sub C crew as well, you know. Big rest in peace to Skeppers, you know. Just like, it's a good vibe at the moment. We're just going to keep it rolling, keep it doing. So, nothing but love.
Yeah, please do, man.
Yeah,
please do.
No, I appreciate it.
And where do people find you at? MCP Smurf?
Yeah, MCP Smurf on Instagram. We also got scratchesrecords.com. You know, I've got to update that website and you know, start showing people what's happening in the next step. We got some tunes from Rag Army coming up soon. My boys who are in a band called The Strides also jumped on a couple of features. We got some tunes coming out with Scratches. Big shout out to, you know, Cooking with Caustic Yoda, you know, has been holding us down as an amazing engineer, you know, for years and years. The backup and the team, you know, that I have had, and, you know, all the people that I haven't spoken about have like super critical in the fact that I'm even doing anything, and I feel supported within that, you know, essence of the extended scene as a whole, you know. So shout out to anyone that I didn't say what up to, because there's I've been massively influenced by so many people, and I'm so like thankful to be in a part of, you know, as a part of this culture that is worldwide, and you know, and the people that I've managed to meet is awesome. So it's a good thing, and I'm glad to be, you know, out here kicking it with you. I appreciate you saying what up, man.
Live from Brisbane, from the new setup here in the Shire Studios. I mean, salute to you, sir. Like, straight up, man, for all the work you're doing, man.
Big up.
Everything you're doing, everything you've done, and everything you'll continue to do, man. Once again, man, this has been Beers, Beats, and the Beers. My man, Mesk on the camera. MCP Smurf in the spot. Shouts to the Big Village crew. Shouts to everyone out there. Shouts to Sydney. Shouts to Brisbane. Shouts to Melbourne. Shouts to Adelaide. Shouts to everyone across this map. Man, you can find at Beers, Beats, the Beers. You know, just go to at Beers, Beats, the Beers. Fucking, you'll find us everywhere. Gmail, Instagram, fucking all that sort of shit. And we are out here, we are live, we are doing this, and we're out here communicating that message, man.
Much love, and thank you for all that
thank you again, brother. Enjoy. It's been Beers, Beats, and the Beers.
Peace.